It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And welcome to another edition of Sminty Fiction. This is a once-a-month thing that we do. It is ongoing, as in the storyline is continuous. So if you haven't listened to the first, the first edition of Terminus, because we're in the sequel now, maybe do that first. But if you know, again, I know people who just watch one random episode of a TV show, so I'm not going to tell you what to do. It does have sound effects. I have friends that is really not their thing, so I understand if that's not your thing. But that being said, Christina does an amazing job. Mm-hmm. So all of the shout outs to her. So if you listen to the previous episode that was Sminty Fiction, it got split in half, kind of suddenly sounds wrong. It got split in half after we recorded it.
Right.
Which happens sometimes, because these are, again, more work for Christina. It was a longer chapter. And as I've mentioned before in these, I am very bad. My chapter's lengths are all over the place. They're all over the place. One will be like 25 pages and one will be like 7 pages. So it got split in half. This one is very much a part two of the last chapter. It's picking up right from there, which I guess is kind of a silly thing to say, because obviously, but they were meant to be one is the ultimate point. Mm-hmm. I renewed my contract recently, and you would not believe how much I had to have phone conversations about this with people, because I don't want the company to own it. Even though I don't particularly think they're going to go anywhere. I just don't want them to own it.
Property is important.
Yeah, but I was having phone conversations about this thing I wrote for National Novel Writing Month in like 2010. Like, you can't have it.
Hello, there's so many books that have been published because of that specific program.
It is. You are completely right, but it is funny. I remember, I think it was a tweet, and this was a long time ago, but I remember a tweet where a publisher was like, I can always tell after National Novel Writing Month how many manuscripts get submitted to me. I mean, it makes sense.
That's kind of the point.
Yeah, it's kind of the point. I remember their tone feeling to me very condescending, and it actually prevented me from submitting mine.
Rude. But later
I submitted it, and I did get... With the first one, I got a little down the process, and then I never heard from them again. But I got it passed up to like a 3 rings of people.
Ooh.
3 rings, 3 rungs. Alas. So as I mentioned in the previous episode, this is clearly when I was in my running phase. There's a lot about running in this chapter. I will let you interpret for yourself. about the trauma aspect of it. Content warning, disease, illness, end of the world stuff, child endangerment, trauma, death, dead bodies, descriptions of dead bodies. Nothing is too in-depth, but it is there. Also a note, as I joked in the previous one, I know nothing about horses. So just give me a pass, please. Or write in. I also don't know about how our like phone landlines would work after the apocalypse. I'll just put that out there too. Quick recap. So this is the second part of a trilogy that I wrote once a year for NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month. It's actually called Big Things Start Small, but I figured for simplicity, we would stick with Terminus 2. And it is about disease, family. Our main character, Tilda, is on the run with her son, Madison, because she had him illegally and she didn't want him to be taken away from her. She has discovered that the religious ruling sector that works alongside the government, the state that the U.S. has become, they made a vaccine and then they destroyed it because they believe people should be punished and it's sort of God's will. But they saved one vaccine for her son, Madison, who got it because it turns out he is their grandson. But okay, they are on the run from the state. Tilda has made this broadcast announcing to the world, well, the world, to the country, through this broadcast system that they have set up, what the state and this religious organization did. And then she ran for it. So now they're on the run. It's winter. Things are bad. And there's a man with a horse. And they don't know what he's about. Samantha.
I just love that you've talked about man on the horse for a while now. And I love the horse.
He's a menacing figure, or is he? but yes, they're on the run from him. He seems to be tracking them. And they had a brief respite in a cabin. They found a generator. It was great. But now they've had to go back out into the cold, snowy wilderness and try to get away from him. So that's where we are. Let's get into it.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
As they traveled further south, the snow melted away, revealing pine green grass under a bed of wet leaves. Madison was able to spot a trail uncovered by the snow, overgrown, but clearly a path. Tilda guided Scout onto it, which snaked along southwardly, winding but in a general direction that they needed to be going. The air warmed as well, still cold, but Tilda gauged it to be just above freezing. The sun sat in the sky like a pale, doleful eye, holding vigil over their journey. Madison hummed every now and then, pointing out wildlife or interesting rock formations or landmarks. They passed a thin tree, sharp and jagged, but somehow adorned with orange, red, and pink blooms. It felt out of place, dreamlike, surreal, in the otherwise colorless landscape. They stopped before it for a second, the sun shining directly overhead, bleached light passing through a strange moment in space and time. They continued on. Madison nodded off against her shoulder, snoring softly. Tilda grew tired herself, her eyes heavy, as the steady up-and-down rhythm of Scout steps were hypnotizing, but she forced herself awake, concentrating solely on the path. To her left, she could see a range of blue mountains, their crowns wreathed in clouds and capped with snow. To the left, a cavalcade of dead trees, a forest deep, without end. As the sun moved further down in the sky, Tilda started looking for places to set up camp. She wondered what she'd do with Scout. Was it human to tie her up for the night? Did she have to worry about the horse running away? The path snaked off in several directions, wooden arrow signs bearing trail names like Razorback and Blood Mountain Bypass pointing in all different directions. They must be near the southern end of the forest. Madison, awake once again, read these with interest, pontificating aloud what each name might allude to. Tilda kept south, following a sign that said campgrounds and trailhead entrance, 6 miles. Tilda didn't allow herself to get too excited at the thought of campsites. It probably just meant swaths of flat dirt with fire pits where people could set up tents. But it did mean that they must be near the national park's end. Then they'd face the same problem that had led them to the solitude of the forest. People. People heading for DC and looking for them. As the sun neared the horizon, they passed rows of rotting canoes, a row of outhouses and bathhouses, all falling apart. Then a series of squares separated from each other by lines of small rocks. The trail beneath Scout's hooves became gravel, crunching with the horse's steps. Main office, a wooden sign read, the words carved in whimsical font. Tilda followed in the direction it indicated as the light faded, twilight settling in around them. The trees curved around the narrow road. A lake shimmered through the barren trees to their right, dancing with the light of the rising moon. A wooden shack came into view, small but in good shape, a sign reading main office in the same curly lettering planted out front. Tilda could make out a fenced area in the back, perfect for keeping Scout overnight, given there weren't any weaknesses in the fence. Although granted, she could probably just jump over it, if she really wanted. The temperature had dropped again. Madison shivered against her. Clumsily, Tilda slid down from Scout's back, almost losing her footing when her boots made contact with the hard, frosted dirt. Once she'd steadied herself, she reached up for Madison and helped him climb down, setting him on the ground and reaching out for Scout's reins, her legs tingling with numbness. She weaved her way over to the fence, happy to see the gate was located right next to the door of the office. Which made sense, but Tilda had learned on her travels that a lot of things didn't make sense in the way they were set up. Counterintuitive. She fumbled with the latch and then had to use her hip to shove the gate open, a pile of dead black leaves piled up on the other side. She guided a tired scout in and pulled the gate shut behind her, searching in the blue light that comes before dark for any gaps in the fence. Her precursory glance found none, but she would give it a more thorough once-over when she returned with some water for Scout after she and Madison had set up inside the office. Scout meandered through the fenced area, giving a backwards toss of the head that Tilda took to mean, "You're welcome." Tilda slid the lock back in place and took Madison by the hand, leading him along a pathway bordered with curling green ferns on either side to the office's entrance. The blinds were pulled over the windows, blocking their view. When she tested the door, it swung open easily. She supposed there had been no reason to lock it up, really. People just stopped showing up to work, to parks, to camps. She stepped inside, alert, Madison hidden behind her. It was dark. It took several seconds of rapid blinking for Tilda's eyes to adjust. The first thing she noticed was the smell. It was stale and sweet, like something rotting. While not overpowering, it lingered in the nose and the back of the throat, just enough to be unpleasant, to make your stomach uneasy. Tilda hoped they would not discover a corpse here. It had been a long time since she and Madison had stumbled upon a dead body on their journey. Occasionally, they'd pass one outdoors, almost universally face down in the leaves, somehow absent of flies or any other outward draw or sign that, yes, someone died here. Someone had their last moments here, and their shell is here. The first time they'd seen one, Madison had been too young to understand and had assumed the woman was sleeping. Tilda let him think that. But when Madison was 5, they stayed in a small house with a shag carpet and obnoxious green and yellow curtains. As they explored the house, they found a man, wrinkled and pale, with gray hair, sitting in a red armchair, eyes open but unseeing. Dead. As though he'd sat down and never gotten up again, failing to see the point. Madison had scurried behind Tilda, frightened by his garish appearance and the utter finality of his silence and blank stare, and asked why the man wasn't moving. Why wasn't he looking at them? Tilda had backed them out of the room, afraid of the eyes filmed over of the empty husk sitting in a chair, just as he may have done every night. How long had he been there? What exactly had been the cause of death? Tilda had to explain then about death. Madison watched her stumble through an explanation with wide eyes. She couldn't remember if her parents had this conversation with her. Perhaps she just intuited or picked it up from books. The child didn't seem afraid, but more confused. Madison's lack of understanding made it more difficult. Where did the man go? Why did he have to leave? What happens after? He asked. She had tried to explain that she didn't have the answers, that no one did. Some things, Tilda thought, we never outgrow. We never completely escape our fear of the unknown, the desire to go home, wherever that may be. Tilda could grow to be an old woman and would crave the safety and advice of her parents. Leaving the door open, both for light and in hopes of airing at the office, Tilda crept further inside, her newly adjusted eyes tracing over the room's contents. Mahogany desks, 3 of them, small and simple, adorned with the usual desk things. Black phones that looked old even to Tilda. Papers, pens, pencils, highlighters, safety pins, scissors. A poster of a cartoon owl and a green hat with a speech bubble that read, "Give a hoot, don't pollute," in big blocky yellow letters. One wall was covered with a map of Virginia and had an inset of the park, and with another poster of a bear with a ranger hat, one paw pointing sternly at the viewer reading, "Only you can prevent forest fires." Above the desk immediately to the left upon entering was a giant whiteboard calendar. The month at the top read August in pretty green cursive. There was no year. different color markers hung by magnets and chains from the bottom, each color designated for a different type of activity. It had things like Appalachian Trail Hiker Supply Drop, Bonfire Plus Ghost Stories, Whitewater Rafting, Camp Start, Archery Practice, Horseback Riding. The nameplate on the desk read Maggie Stevens. The floor was of fake wood. Tilda could tell it was fake just by the sound it made with each step and how it felt underfoot. There was a small cot in the back, low, with sheets that even looked uncomfortable. A flag Tilda recognized to be that of the old United States was mounted on a gold pole in the corner, with another flag dangling just below. Tilda assumed it was Virginia's, or whatever state they might be in. Above the cot was a wide window that looked out on the fenced area behind the office. Tilda could see Scout at the far corner, grazing. To their right was a short hallway with two closed doors. Opening the door closest to the entrance, Tilda found an office supply closet, papers and pens and envelopes and staplers. The opposite door led to an efficient bathroom. Tilda tested the faucet, flipping the handle, but no water came out. Tilda closed the door behind them, feeling on edge. The smell dissipated somewhat, and Tilda shut the entrance door, locking it. Madison clung to her, scared. He could feel it too. Something heavy hung in the air here. This tiny clean office felt menacing. Haunted. She forgot her resolve to make sure Scout had water and to check the fence for weaknesses. The horse didn't appear to be going anywhere. Tilda would take her chances. They didn't have the water to spare anyway. Hopefully they'd find another stream in the morning. If Scout was still there. Madison sat uncertainly on the edge of the bed, and Tilda sat next to him, nervous, with her back to the window. She half turned to gaze out of it, pinpricks of twinkling light in the blue velvet sky like flecks of diamonds. Scout lowered herself, folding up her legs as she settled down for the night, her dark head turning their way as though she knew they were inside, looking out at her. Tilda removed herself from her backpack, unzipping the front and pulling out a pack of trail mix for Madison and a granola bar for herself and two mini bottles of water. They ate and drank in silence, looking around as those expecting someone or something to reveal its presence at any moment and leap out at them. The room felt volatile, like it could come alive. Madison finished first, curling into Tilda's side, bright eyes darting around furtively. He buried his head into her jacket. Tilda chewed on her granola, her throat dry in spite of the water. She felt very alone, but at the same time very much like she was being watched. "Tell me a story," Madison mumbled into her side. "I always tell you the stories. It's your turn to tell one." "That's because you're so good at telling them, Mouse." She ruffled his hair, rifling through the stories her parents used to tell her as a kid in her head. One that she'd never told Madison before. "Please tell one. This place feels..." Tilda sighed, stroking his hair. "Okay. Lay down." She laid back herself and Madison did the same, resting his head on her stomach. Neither took off their clothes, both silently acknowledging that they may have to flee on short notice. Rooting around, Tilda began telling the story of a boy who grew up feeling lonely, dreaming of flying. Her mother read the story while Tilda was trying to fall asleep as a child, cozy in bed with golden light. Madison dropped off into slumber, but it took a good portion of the first part of the story before he did. Tilda lay awake a good while longer, and when she finally did doze off, she slept fitfully in starts and stops. She kept imagining shapes and shadows, an unformed fear that felt like a presence hovering over them, just behind the corner, behind the desk. She dreamt, and they were dark dreams, and she couldn't recall the contents, but only the fear she'd felt trapped within. She woke, confused, sometime before dawn. Tilda furrowed her brow, trying to make sense of what had woken her. It was a sound, a shrill ringing. At first, she thought she must still be dreaming. There was no way. The phone was ringing. Madison sat up hesitantly, fearful eyes latched the phone like it was a creature about to attack. Tilda inched to the edge of the bed, never taking her eyes off the black receiver on the desk near the door as it rang. She waited for it to stop, but it kept ringing. She glanced out the window. Scout was awake, tail swishing back and forth as she grazed lazily. Cautiously, Tilda stood, approaching the phone with bated breath. She answered it. Who would be on the other side? She reached out her hand. Madison hissed, "Don't," behind her. Her hand hesitated over the receiver, her breath smoking in front of her. The ringing stopped. Tilda froze, looked around, half expecting someone to be standing behind her. Everything felt too still. Time felt too still. The phone started ringing again. Loud, brazen, insistent. She jumped, coming unstuck. Unsettled, she strode over to her pack and swung it onto her shoulders, pulling Madison to his feet. Someone knew they were here. Someone was trying to contact them. "Come on," she whispered. "Let's go." She peeked out the doorway into the tree line, but she saw nothing. Tilda turned the corner and opened the gate to the fence. She gestured to Scout, but the horse did not seem inclined to obey. Huffing, she made her way for the horse, Madison trailing behind. Scout snorted as the two approached. "Up you go," Tilda muttered, lifting Madison, who climbed onto the saddle. Tilda leveraged her boot in the stirrup and hoisted herself up behind him, taking hold of the reins. She gave them a flick and kicked a bit with her boots. "Sorry, Scout." The horse grunted but obeyed, breaking into a fast trot. Tilda guided her out of the fence, guiltily thinking she'd never gotten her water. The phone was still ringing inside the office. It chased them out of the paddock and onto the dirt road leading out of the campsite. The sun peeked out over the horizon to their left, violent pink and purple emitting from an orange nucleus. Neither Tilda or Madison spoke, the tension palpable in their bodies. The chilly air rose like smoke, a thick fog that swirled around Scout's hooves, but then enveloped them in a damp embrace, making the road ahead difficult to see and putting Tilda even more on edge. She pricked her ears, depending now more on sound, but knew that if someone had known they had been in that office and was trying to contact them, then they'd be able to guess which way they were going and could mount an ambush. Tilda turned her head left and right, alert, hunted. With all the fog, she could not push Scout to go too quickly. The road sloped downward, razorback curves, a combination of loose dust, gravel, and packed and frozen layers of dirt. Scout's hoofs slid every now and then under the loose topsoil, especially on sharp turns and downgrades, making Tilda's heart jolt into her throat every time, and Scout huffed in what sounded like frustration. It could also be in part due to Madison, who was gripping her mane more tightly than strictly necessary and pushing back into Tilda, doing his best to escape the sense of sliding that the downward gravity gave him, inexorably pulling him forward. So dense was the fog and canopy of dead tree branches overhead, the light from the sun reached them only after much diffusion. Several times, Tilda hopped off Scout's back and led her forward on foot, unable to make out the road, staring at each step of her boot, sometimes encountering large, jagged rocks that had been exposed only by weathering. At one point, they came across an obstacle in the form of a downed tree across the road. Tilda and Madison would have climbed it, but it was quite large and the branches jutting out sharp and unforgiving. To their right was a steep drop-off. Peering down, Tilda could not even see the bottom with the amount of smoky air. So they circled around the tree on the left, behind massive gnarled roots pulled from the ground, strands of smaller roots dangling from them. The powerful smell of earth overtook them as they made their way around, avoiding the gaping maw in the ground left by the tree and stepping over sizable branches sprouting armies of twig-like sticks. They needed to stop, as anxious as it made Tilda. A thick, ropey saliva had started collecting around Scout's mouth. Dehydration. Keeping an eye out for one of the many potholes, Tilda found one on the side of the road that looked shallow enough to serve their purpose. She helped Madison slide down and shrugged out of her pack, pulling out two bottles. With a heavy heart, she poured them into the shallow hole. Scout immediately began lapping up the liquid. Tilda supposed they could just leave the horse, but they were making such better time, and if they needed to make a quick getaway, they'd want to be riding Scout. She replaced the empty bottles and pulled out two more squat ones, one for her and one for Madison, along with two meal replacement bars, which she doubted sincerely were ever truly meant to replace meals unless you were going for that ridiculous beach body that they read about, because they always left her hungry. One peanut butter, which she gave to Madison, and one apple cinnamon for herself. Both of them looked around as they ate, expecting to see a face in the fog, hear a voice in the distance. "Why is it so foggy?" Madison asked between bites. His voice quavered. "I don't know," Tilda said, then hoping to provide him some sort of comfort, added, "Probably just a change in temperature." Madison nodded, humoring her, Tilda suspected. She doubted she'd actually calmed any of his fears with talk of weather. She swiped her palms together to free her gloves of crumbs, taking Madison's empty bottle along with hers and putting them in her backpack, trying to ignore the pang of panic at how light it felt as she replaced it on her shoulders. Without bidding, Madison climbed up onto Scout's back, who was waiting patiently for them next to her improvised water bucket, and then almost fell back down. Tilda hovered behind him, ready to assist, but he pulled himself back up, panting a little at the effort. Tilda stepped up and swung her leg over behind him, once again taking the reins. She made a clicking sound with her tongue, pulling sharply on the right rein to direct Scout back to the road. Already, she felt more at ease controlling Scout, but she still felt very much like a little girl who could lose that control to a powerful animal at any moment. The fog became less dense, but lingered close to the ground. The dirt road dead-ended into a paved one. Tilda studied each direction. There were mirrors of each other. She chose to go west. Scout's hooves clip-clopped on the asphalt as they fell into a more steady pace of a fast trot now that they were on a more even surface. Madison finally breached the silence. "I thought the phones were dead. Was someone trying to contact us?" Tilda thought for a moment. Could it possibly be just some kind of ghost in the system? A discharge of electricity built up and randomly expelled? Maybe it rang every morning. Maybe it was someone trying to find Maggie Stevens. Or hell, maybe it was Maggie Stevens' ghost playing a prank. But Tilda didn't believe in ghosts. And something in her gut told her that call had been meant for them. It could have been a surge of electricity somewhere. But I think someone was trying to reach us. Madison digested that for a moment. "Who?" "I don't know," Tilda said, thinking it would have to be someone in arm or an enforcer, someone associated with the state. "What if it was the man with the horse? What if he's trying to get his horse back?" Tilda stopped herself from laughing aloud at Madison's innocent question, more from surprise than anything else. She hadn't considered that, but it was possible. He was the last person that had seen them, and he did have a reason to be looking for them. But so did a lot of people. "How'd they know we were there?" A cold crept up Tilda's spine that had nothing to do with the chilly air. She couldn't stop herself from looking at the desolate road behind them, but saw nothing. She turned back to face forward after a long moment. "That's a good question, Mouse." Almost in answer, the whine of a connection establishing surrounded them. Madison clapped his hands over his ears, and Tilda just stopped herself from doing the same. Scout faltered uneasily. Tilda looked around wildly as something clicked, her eyes landing on a wooden telephone pole. Following it up revealed the speaker boxes Arm had used to broadcast their messages. Without waiting for the broadcast to begin, Tilda snapped the reins and dug her heels into Scout's sides, goading the horse into a steady gallop. A voice said her name, and she almost dropped the reins in shock. It was not the voice she'd been expecting. It was not Aaron or Darla Delane, but a male voice, one she hadn't heard since escaping the battleground that was the underground lab in Chicago. It was Mark. In all the chaos, she didn't know who had survived Chicago. She hadn't stopped to think about the shock of those resistance survivors when they'd heard her voice on the airways, usually reserved for some proclamation from ARM, telling the world that there was a vaccine. That ARM had created HSV-5 and infected the global population.
"This message is for Tilda Nguyen. Tilda Nguyen, we need you to come back to DC. The landscape of the state is changing. ARM has fallen from grace. If we are to fight HSV-5 and secure a future for our children, you and your son need to return to DC immediately. You will be well taken care of and rewarded for your service."
His voice gentled.
"Please, Tilda. We can win this. We can change things."
He fell silent, the static of the connection buzzing around them. Tilda could picture him at the console she'd made her desperate broadcast and had been shot at, where Aaron or Darla used to sit and administer judgments, dole out punishments, and call for the capture of criminals, including Tilda, hunched over, wondering if his message was reaching the intended recipient. Scout had stopped without Tilda pulling on the reins. Tilda hadn't even noticed.
We'll be waiting.
The connection clicked off.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
And that brings us to the end of this chapter of Terminus 2. As you can tell, I am terrified of phones. Clearly. Have been. Will always be. yes, the man on the horse. The mystery remains. I told the story in the last episode about the 24 seconds, which was this thing that I had back when I was at university. There was 24 seconds of darkness when I would walk home at night. And I saw a black horse on the night of a tornado. And you were right about the date, Samantha, that you said. Yeah, because I was like, 2008? Mm-hmm. That feels like I was in high school still. But no, 2008, that would have been my freshman year. And that's when it happened. So yes, points to you. I'm really excited to share where this is going. I will tease. This story has a cliffhanger.
What?
Yes, it's a great cliffhanger, but I know people who hate cliffhangers.
I do. I have binged things.
I hope you stick around, even if you don't like it, because we'll just go immediately into the third part. Yeah. But I will tell you, I was thinking about it when I was putting this together. I was like, oh, yeah.
Whoopsie. Here we go.
Yes. All right. Well, we love doing these. I love doing them. Mm-hmm. Christina makes them amazing. Thank you again, Christina. So hopefully you enjoy them. And if you do have any suggestions for something we could do in the public domain like this, we would love to do it. We did it once in our Women Writing Horror where we did Frankenstein, and that was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So just let us know. And yeah, if you got any theories, I love hearing from people about the theories. You can write to us at stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on TikTok and Instagram at @StuffINeverToldYou. We have a TeePublic store and we have a book you can get wherever you get your books. Thanks as always to our super producer Christina, our executive producer Maya, and our contributor Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.